This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. This Sunday, over 800 new laws that were passed in the last legislative session went into effect. They range from the huge to the trivial, and it's pretty much a mixed bag about what's in these laws, what these laws do, and it sort of reflects the legislature that we had in Austin at the time. We're joined now with Matthew Watkins, political news editor for the Texas Tribune, to tell us more about these laws and how they came to be. Matthew Watkins, welcome to The Source.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So first, before we get into these new laws, I want to ask you about the possibility of a special session, an emergency special session. Today, 61 members of the House Democratic Caucus called on the governor to call an emergency special session to deal with gun violence. What do you think are the chances that this is going to be something that's going to happen?
That's a good question. You know, we haven't heard an answer, a firm answer from the governor about whether this is a possibility he's actually considering. It's worth noting that there were Democratic calls for a special session similar to this after just the El Paso shooting, and Abbott said at the time that that was not something he was considering. Right now, he's kind of taken the stance that good legislation takes time. We need to study these issues. He's appointed two commissions that have been looking into this. The House has also created its own committee, the Senate as well, that are kind of studying what can be done to kind of stop these incidences of mass violence. Right now, that seems to be the answer that Abbott is looking for. Whether recommendations come from those committees, those commissions, to do more, it remains to be seen.
Looking at this through a political lens, is there mounting public pressure on Abbott to do something? Typically the conventional wisdom was for Texas, and we saw this with the results in the legislature, we'll get to that, that Texans wanted, very loose Second Amendment gun rights in Texas, and that's what he was going to give them. He had tweeted out a lot of messages about in support of guns and gun ownership. Has the tide turned?
Yeah, you know, Abbott has been to the scene of 5 mass shootings in Texas since he's been governor. And, you know, especially these 2 recent ones in the span of a few weeks have really put him in a difficult spot about what to do. There are firm calls kind of across the aisle that we need to do something to stop these incidents of violence. But it's really challenging to find something that can actually get through this Texas legislature. You know, Democrats are calling for gun restrictions, whether they're, you know, big, major changes like Beto O'Rourke is calling for, you know, basically buying back assault rifles from owners, to more smaller things, whether it's what are known as red flag laws or, doing things related to background checks. The challenge here is that, as you said, Texas has a long culture of gun ownership, and there are a lot of people in his own party who are opposed to anything that would make it harder or more complicated for people to obtain or keep their guns. And if any changes are going to happen, he would have to kind of navigate that pressure coming from both sides of the aisle.
Our phone line is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at @tprsource. So let's look at the new laws that came about. There were 10 gun laws that were protecting Second Amendment rights, according to gun advocates. And what's the general gist behind these new laws?
Yeah, you know, a lot of these were small laws, passing changes that had been requested by gun rights groups or things like that. You know, I think the one that kind of stands out the most to me is the carrying after a natural disaster, starting September 1st, when Governor Abbott declares a disaster area, whether across the state or in a particular county, people in that area where a disaster has been declared can carry their guns without a license. The idea behind this at the time was basically that, like, say you're in a house where there's a hurricane coming and you need to flee the area. You know, A, you don't want to necessarily leave your gun behind unprotected in cases where there might be, you know, someone might break into your house or something like that. But then also you don't want to risk kind of losing your property. If you don't have a license to carry your gun, you can't take it with you as you're evacuating. And so this was designed to close what this kind of loophole was. You know, obviously, ever since these shootings have happened, people have kind of looked back at these laws, looked back at people like Governor Greg Abbott and other state lawmakers bragging about kind of expanding Second Amendment rights and saying, you know, these shootings, they argue, are situations where we need to be looking at restricting gun access, and here we are, you know, right after a shooting happens, expanding that access.
But these new laws, these 10 for the Second Amendments, they seem to, that these lawmakers were really looking long and hard at trying to figure out ways that they could pass something so they can claim their Second Amendment credentials. I mean, you have to wonder, like, you know, were these really necessary? Were these more symbolic than anything else?
I think a lot of them were symbolic or at least had a very minor effect. But you're absolutely right that, you know, for more than a decade, even longer than that, being able to say that you pass laws that gun rights groups, especially the NRA, support, being able to say that you've expanded Second Amendment rights is a winning argument in Texas, particularly in Republican primaries. And there is a strong reluctance among Republicans, Governor Abbott all the way down to, you know, freshman members of the House, to not give the impression that they are, you know, restricting gun rights. One thing that came up, you know, the 2019 session came not too long after the school shooting in Santa Fe, and Governor Abbott, you know, very briefly floated the idea of what are known as red flag laws, which basically allows a judge to issue an order to have someone's gun taken away because they've been deemed dangerous. That was very quickly knocked down by the Lieutenant Governor, Dan Patrick, a hardline conservative in the Senate. And, you know, Abbott very quickly backed away. And it kind of highlights that effort. This was something that, you know, the NRA isn't necessarily even opposed to. But just the idea of doing anything that kind of restricts access to guns can be a dangerous proposition for a Republican in Texas.
Lemonade stands. We have finally solved the problem of lemonade stands. Why was this a big deal? I mean, they really trumpeted the fact that neighborhoods and other cities can no longer prohibit lemonade stands.
Yeah, so this came across people's radar in 2015 when some kids in East Texas had their lemonade stand shut down by authorities because they didn't have the right permit. You know, cities have health code laws, you know, laws about who can sell what food when without it being inspected and things like that. And, you know, usually a lemonade stand isn't going to attract the attention of authorities, but in this case it did. And it kind of, I guess, exposed in people's minds a need to, you know, make clear in the law that, you know, your kid sitting in the front lawn selling lemonade is not breaking the law.
And so free enterprise is safe for children to sell lemonade. We're going to take a break. Our phone number is 210-614-8980. 210-614-8980. The laws are large and some are small. They impact a lot of people. Tobacco 21, the end of the driver responsibility program. A lot of these will impact your life. We want to hear from you. 210-614-8980. The source continues right after this.
Immigration.
I think we need to all get in before the wall goes up.
Health.
The Promotora, they have all the resources that can get them the help that they need.
Art.
There's this kind of subversiveness to it, right?
We cover all these topics and more on Fronteras as we examine issues along the border and beyond. I'm Norma Martinez. Download Fronteras where you find your favorite podcasts.
Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In the next half hour, we're going to be talking about progressive district attorneys. U.S. Attorney General William Barr is an outspoken critic of them. We'll be getting hearing from the other side. Right now, we're talking about new laws in Texas. If you want to join the conversation, it's 210-614-8980. I want to listen to a call that we got on our voicemail line. This is from Mike.
I think the legislators are spending too much time adopting so many stupid rules and laws, and they're trying to legislate morality. And that's why we have so many problems in society today, because of the crushing weight of all these do's and don'ts that you can and can't do. And everybody wonders why there's such a problem with young people and people getting just crazed or stressed out all the time. It's because of all these stupid laws.
All right. Matthew Watkins is with us. He's the political news editor for the Texas Tribune. Too many stupid laws. Did we get more stupid laws this time around than we have in the past, Matthew?
Well, you know, there are 820 new laws going into effect this month. That's obviously a lot, but not all of those will be things that will affect everyone's everyday life. Some of those are, you know, renaming stretches of highways or minor kind of local issues. You know, that is one of the reasons that the legislature only meets once every 2 years. Is I think a lot of the founders of Texas and a lot of the lawmakers still in office today agree with this idea, is that we don't need people just to be sitting around looking for laws for the sake of making laws. We have a part-time legislature that we want these people out in our communities talking to people, and we're, you know, in Texas there's a strong belief among leadership in limited government. So I think, you know, there were quite a few laws that I think lawmakers would argue were very important for this state, but I don't think you'd get that much of a disagreement from our governor, our lieutenant governor, our House Speaker, that we don't need to be spending too much time writing too many laws.
But the legislature comes together once every 2 years for a limited number of days. It's a system that's designed to prevent laws from being passed, yet they managed to do over 820 of them. That's an accomplishment.
Sure, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because you hear this a lot, especially early in the session when people file bills, some that don't really have a chance to go anywhere. You know, the question of, like, well, don't they have more important things to do than regulating, like the one we mentioned earlier, the lemonade stands? And, you know, there's almost 200 lawmakers in the Capitol each day. Not all of them have the positions to write the budget or do some of the other big bills that came through this session. So, you know, each bill is important to at least one person, at least one lawmaker. And I think, you know, if you went down this list of new laws, you'd get a pretty spirited defense from the author.
So no more driver responsibility program. This is something that had been on the hit list for many sessions, and it finally was passed, this much maligned program, which critics say trapped low-income Texans into the cycle of debt, was finally able to put it away. So, you know, what made the difference?
So one of the big issues with this, it was a pretty widely unpopular bill or a program among lawmakers, but it brought in revenue. So basically, if you violated, you know, got speeding tickets, traffic tickets, you would have to pay certain fines, larger fines, as the number of tickets you received increased. And those fines went towards funding the state's emergency trauma care system. So that was why it was hard to kill, because if you kill it, then you're losing that money for a program that a lot of people find really important. This time around, the state had a lot of money to work with due to a booming economy, and they managed to find other ways to fund that trauma care system, which allowed them to finally get rid of that unpopular program.
So we have a new smoking age in Texas. It's now 21, and that includes vaping and other tobacco products. For a state that it took such a long time to pass a prohibition on texting while driving, it seemed pretty unusual that this was able to get through the legislature in its first go-around.
Yeah, it was surprising. This was a bill that was brought up as a priority by Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick. He ranked it as one of his top priorities at the beginning of the session. We had not really heard that much about it prior to him doing that. It kind of caught us a little bit by surprise. But it sailed through the legislature. It sailed through the House and the Senate. And, you know, basically the argument is, let's give young people a little bit more time to decide whether they really want to start smoking before they get addicted to a substance that can ultimately, you know, lead to their demise.
Every legislative session is going to be a battleground on women's reproductive rights, and this one was no different. We saw a Born Alive bill passed, House Bill 16. What does that actually do?
So this would require doctors to treat a baby born alive in the rare instance of a failed abortion attempt. Rare instance is kind of the key word here. This almost never happens. But this was kind of an issue that was really on the front of a lot of anti-abortion people's minds. Late last year, there was some legislation and some questions about whether Democrats would support a bill like this. You know, in terms of practical impact, I'd say, you know, this almost never happens. But it was an important kind of symbolic thing among Republicans to put into the letter of the law.
The defunding of healthcare, women's healthcare providers who are somehow linked to abortion providers. Now, the state totally will prohibit any state and local government from partnering with these agencies. How impactful is that?
This one will have some impact. You know, there were different cities that partnered with Planned Parenthood for different kind of public health programs that often, you know, didn't really have anything to do with abortion, but, you know, Planned Parenthood offered other services. You know, one instance, the city of Austin has a contract. They lease out some space to Planned Parenthood. That contract will be allowed to continue through its term, which is another 20 or so years. But in theory, they would not be able to enter into a new contract like that. But it, you know, it'll change. It'll require cities in some cases to find new service providers for certain public health initiatives,
like cancer screenings, things like that, which is important.
That's
and
right.
And so they have to find a new provider, and in some areas it may not be available. So we'll try to keep on top of that. The number is 210-614-8980. Let's go to Sandra on the phones. Hi, Sandra. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Lobbyists write many of the bills, and they are a waste of legislators' time and participants who are in the committees to hear them. Lobbyists provide much money to the legislators for their campaigns, so they have a lot of power.
All right, Senator, thank you for that call. So how important are lobbyists? Do they write these bills? This is Matthew Watkins. He's the political news editor for the Texas Tribune. Go ahead.
There's no question that lobbyists have a very large presence around the Capitol. You know, we have an office just a few blocks from the Capitol, right across from the Starbucks. If you go to the Capitol, you know, in the weeks, months before the session, you're almost certain to see a lawmaker, you know, having coffee with a lobbyist. Almost always that lobbyist will come armed with campaign checks, you know. Then also, if you go to the Capitol during the session, there are often lobbyists kind of mulling around outside the legislative chamber. The interaction is common and frequent. They certainly do draft model legislation that sometimes lawmakers will carry and basically submit as it is written. You know, the lobbyists would argue that they serve an important role and they're serving the interests of their clients, which often, you know, need help. You know, it's not just big businesses. It can also be healthcare groups. It can be a whole bunch of different things. There are lobbyists representing cities and things like that. But you know, I think the caller is correct in saying that they play a big role in the way laws get made in Austin.
Right. So as we look at the bills that became law, I really am drawn to the bills that don't become law. And one of them was a prohibition on government, local governments, from having lobbyists. Why is that a thing? And how would that change Austin if that became a thing?
So, for instance, we had one of the big issues during the legislative session this year was related to property taxes, right? And efforts to limit the growth and how much Texans' property taxes go up each year. The Texas Municipal League has lobbyists, and they, you know, funded by state governments, by city governments, who were trying to influence that legislation, trying to make the case to lawmakers that, certain ideas behind this law would be harmful to their city budgets and the services that they offer their residents. And so it would be impactful. You know, the Texas Municipal League in particular is a very influential, very active lobbying group in the Capitol, and a lot of, very conservative members have been very frustrated that state or that city taxpayer money is going to try to influence state laws. You know, it is worth mentioning that Texas has its own lobbyists that try to influence Congress, too. This is like a fairly standard thing for way things go. And, you know, one of the reasons that this bill did not make it was because, as we have noted, lobbyists can be very influential, and the Texas Municipal League and the Texas Association of Counties and other groups were pretty strongly opposed to the bill.
Now, another bill that did not pass, but it passed the Senate, was SB 17, which people called a backdoor discrimination against the LGBTQ community and religious minorities. And so when it got to the House, it just sort of nothing happened. So was there a different mood in the House than in the Senate and we saw as a result of the changing legislature?
I would say that there was a different mood. You know, the Democrats made big gains in the 2018 elections. It was a more moderate House because of that. And, you know, also I think Republicans are weary about losing the House to Democrats in 2020, and that weighed on people's minds. You know, one of the things that people were saying around here was that this was a bread-and-butter issues session, that, you know, the big focus, the thing that gained the most attention were issues related to school finance, property taxes, less kind of social issues, less of that kind of big controversial stuff that can sometimes dominate a session, like what dominated the 2017 session. You know, the big question is, will that continue to be the case in 2021? A lot of that will depend on who wins these 2020 elections.
And it seemed like bills that probably would have passed easily the session before, like the protections for Confederate monuments and things like that, didn't go anywhere in this session. But, you know, we did get up some other bills, like protections for women who want to breast milk pump, and people, that's a good thing for public health.
Sure, absolutely. You know, that bill in particular was an interesting one because we already had the law on the book saying that you could breastfeed, you know, basically wherever you want in public as long as you're allowed to be in that place. But it was unclear, and some people argued that it didn't specify that you could pump breast milk in addition to breastfeeding. This law kind of cleared that up. You know, that's one of the big things that lawmakers are worried about in this election are suburban women, women in particular, and are they leaving the Republican Party, and is that changing the political dynamic of Texas? You know, this is a bill that, you know, could be seen as an attempt to, you know, reach out to women to say that the lawmakers in the Capitol, vast majority of which are men, are sensitive to the issues that women face in the state.
And beer drinking to go, is that also in that list?
Yeah, beer drinking to go. That was an interesting one too. The idea that you can now show up to a microbrewery or a brew pub and buy some beer to go. We live in an interesting state. Again, this goes back to the lobbyists, where the rules around alcohol are very protectionist and protect certain groups, particularly beer distributors. And that one has been the idea of beer to go has been popular for a long time, but it took a long time for it to actually go into effect.
All right. Matthew Watkins is political news editor for the Texas Tribune. Matthew, it's great talking with you.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies, produced by Kim Johnson and Dallas Williams, with production assistance provided by me, Ruben Garcia, and Jan Ross Piedad. Dan Katz is TPR's news director.